The Seventh Reel. This week, two films. 2003's Intolerable Cruelty, directed by the Coen brothers, and A Good Year, the 2006 romantic comedy film, directed by Ridley Scott. Both of these are romantic comedies. I don't know why I only said that for A Good Year. So this is our very first attempt at comparing two movies. So both of these, romantic comedies, and chosen by me. Much to the chagrin of both of you. So what did you guys, to start off with, what did you guys think of these two films?
Made me want to shoot myself.
Okay, we're off to a very great start.
Positive. Okay, well, my analysis of the, both of those movies, they're essentially the same, but their approach is so different that, because one, Intolerable Cruelty is, I think it's a satire. It's supposed to, like, make fun of the genre at every level, but then it kind of, I feel like
plays it straight.
Yeah, like it doesn't. No, it doesn't even play it straight.
Well, inevitably it does.
Yeah, because it has to, right, to exist as like a work of.
To exist as a romantic comedy, it has to end as one.
And that's the reason I think they removed their names from it. But for that fact alone, I was like, okay, this is at least better, because they understand that this is a really terrible genre.
Yes.
But A Good Year was like straight up a romantic like it was like. We're making a romantic comedy, and it's about this guy, and it's extremely sexist and terrible.
It's one of the most sexist movies I've ever seen, to be honest.
It's just grabbing women.
Stuff that these characters do and say. Heavily considered banging his cousin, something that, I wish that movie could kind of circle back to at one point.
But I disagree that this is a bad genre. Like,
really?
I think it was made a bad genre by films like this. Mm-hmm. Because essentially, romantic comedy started with Woody Allen. Like Annie Hall and, what is it, Manhattan and stuff like that. They are the essential. And, you know, they're made by a man, but they're interesting. I don't find them intolerable. They're sexist, but somehow get away with it. This is just pulp, and I hate it. Yeah. I don't think it means anything. I just hated it.
I found myself enjoying both films. A Good Year, I was just impressed by how insane the movie is and how much it feels like Ridley Scott kind of just did whatever. At points, it feels more like his brother Tony Scott's
movie. It seemed like he just wanted a holiday in France.
And some of the camera work. Well, apparently, all of this was shot 8 minutes away from his house, so effectively it is a holiday for him.
Even the France part?
His house in France. All the France stuff is, like, nearby in his neighborhood, and the London stuff is actually, like, the stuff he had to go out and shoot.
Wow.
Yeah, so this is really, it's just a vacation movie for him. And he shoots it like one. There are some editing choices that I have never seen Ridley Scott do. Repeat himself. What? Like there's some whip pans followed by like these like really, really aggressive whip pans. That almost feels like it feels like there should be like a cartoon zooming sound to like accompany it in terms of just how aggressive the camera just a shift, suddenly whip around. It looks so wacky. At times the editing feels like an Edgar Wright movie. Especially
camera,
on some of his routine.
And he's like taking pictures.
Yeah, all of that stuff feels like an Edgar Wright movie, which is odd. I was like, it feels like a young person. It doesn't feel like Ridley Scott in his 50s making a movie. It feels like kind of a young guy at points. Well, then again, the fact that this was made by a man late in his prime is very evident in the soundtrack.
And the soundtrack was awful. It didn't fit the film at all. It stuck out like a sore thumb.
I like the gore itself. So Yusuf, circling back to the rampant sexism. Mm-hmm. Russell Crowe on Twitter recently described this movie as a chick flick for the guys. And he's right. He's right.
What, you're all sexist pigs who enjoy watching other sexist pigs?
Well, yeah, that doesn't make any sense to me. What is a chick flick for guys? Isn't that just...
In that it's... Well, what's the traditional romantic comedy like in the 2000s? Let's say, like, usually it starts with a woman. Usually it starts with a woman, right? And she's a successful businesswoman who, who comes across a change that forces her to be
like,
romantic.
Sandra Bullock in The Proposal.
Like The Proposal, yeah. And, like that movie that pretty much it made fun of about a woman who, like, found it. She inherited a cottage in New Zealand, and she's a businesswoman, so she she has to go to New Zealand, where she meets to like this is like the traditional trope, right? Like a business-minded woman has to discover what romance means for the very first time, and ultimately walk away from like her background of being independent and business-minded.
What? So he's giving up his background, his thing for her in a good year.
Yes, exactly. So in this one, it's essentially... saying it is.
It's like horrific, you know, non-stop job.
He's really pushing the boundaries of this one.
Oh, and he gets to live in France.
I think it's interesting how both this and Intolerable Cruelty came to the same conclusion, right? Because like George Clooney's character, Intolerable Cruelty, he walks away from doing the divorcee, the pro bono divorce work. They both have to... and they both have like this evil boss. You realize that? They both of these movies have this evil, dark superior who is a reflection of what might happen if he pursued this road any further.
But don't you think like all these films have just created like a generation of people who hate the idea of like a 9-to-5 job, because bosses like this are demonized in such a way that like pretty much everyone I know doesn't want like a 9-to-5.
Well, nobody should want a 9-to-5 job anyway.
Exactly, but it used to be like the dream. Like, you get everything from me. You know, you've got your life set. Once you've got your job, you can buy a house, you can have your family, blah blah blah. But now it's just...
That was when that was actually the case. Now you can get a 9-to-5 and rent for the rest of your life. Like, it doesn't...
You can do that and still barely be able to rent.
That's the point. Yeah, you can... Well, you're never gonna... No young person's actually buying
anything. Yeah, but the problem with they're having is that it's not even that the 9-to-5 sucks, is that it's so good, it lures you into kind of becoming a very comfortable, and you're essentially dying, and the part of you
that
is...
But it's like you're giving everything else up for the, like, the money that you get from this job. Mm.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
he's
like
getting
he talks
away
about
from it.
It has nothing to do with the fact that it makes you an asshole.
Yeah.
None of these men pay the price for being an asshole.
Shocking.
That's something I realized.
Oh, that's like real life, isn't it?
Because Russell Crowe's character
starts
off as
like
a dick.
Their lack of fulfillment as a prize? Maybe that.
No, it's not. They succeed because of it, I think. Right? Russell Crowe's character is like a cutthroat. He plays dirty. Mm-hmm. And he's an asshole. And everybody calls him, multiple characters call him a wanker.
Yeah. He's Australian, right? Or from New Zealand? Okay, because it feels like ridiculous the amount of time he's like, I'm British, a wanker.
Yeah,
and then keeps calling French people frogs, and they're like, English fish and chips, stuff like that. Like, it felt like almost like a parody of...
It felt like someone who doesn't know England or France at all, which I guess...
Where's Ridley Scott from?
He's English.
Is he actually? Yeah, but he's probably lived in America too long.
Yeah, really, Sir Ridley Scott.
And he lives in France.
They give it to anyone.
He has made undeniable contributions to...
Well, I don't like him now that I know
he's... This is the guy who made Alien. This is the guy who made Blade Runner.
I was happy thinking it was a woman.
I wish.
Yeah, so
well,
do
here's
I.
Here's a few things I want to know about this experience. Which one do you guys think is a better one? Which one would you recommend? And
A Good Year.
A Good Year for Michelle, and why?
Well, Intolerable Cruelty was intolerable.
It's funnier on purpose.
Mm-hmm. With regards to what? Like, what about it?
I mean, what the hell? How much were they paying him to just do like a horrific performance like that? I guess that's what he just... Is that his acting style?
He's just doing him. That's just...
pathetic.
Yes.
It felt like a kid's cartoon.
Have you not seen him in any other movies?
No,
this
not
is
really.
Him. Oh, he's always
not
doing
for
this.
Like 10 years. He
this
doesn't
is,
make
was,
good films.
Yeah.
Oh, no, this is
for
just
some
George
reason,
Clooney.
Deciding to direct movies, which he's not good at. But, okay.
Oh, well, Michael Clayton was okay.
Yeah, oh, I haven't seen that one. Okay. I skipped the last two, the one about the space station or whatever.
I'm not gonna watch that.
Get in a real movie and then I'll watch you, George Clooney. But,
Do something.
But okay, so performances, you didn't enjoy them. They felt like they lacked any sincerity or something. Because I felt the same way about Intolerable Cruelty, if that's what I'm getting, Michelle.
I don't think she's very good either. She's just good at looking pretty.
I thought it was, she's okay.
Yeah, but
she is very good at looking
pretty. I think the, like, it, it falls into this trap there. It's trying to be a satire, and at the same time, it's trying to fit within what they're satirizing.
I thought it was a farce the whole way.
But yeah.
To me, it felt like
yeah,
a farce
and,
the whole
and
way.
You've,
like, from the
and
beginning.
You see that in when they're talking about, like, oh, you're exposed, stuff like that, and it's like making
exposed,
fun
yeah.
of the, what is happening. But at the same time, is it like it lacks any sincerity or any heart? It feels just like kind of cruel and cold. And then at the other side is like it feels ridiculous and sappy. So so it kind of fits this weird, you know, it's in the middle of the Venn diagram where it takes the worst of both. I don't know if that's
both John.
But
yeah.
That being said, I would pick this one as well.
I thought it was funnier on purpose.
Intolerable
the more times
cruelty.
I laughed because I think they were deliberately.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were deliberately telling a joke.
Yeah.
Like the
yeah,
there's a joke. There's a scene. It's not even that had anything to do with the romance stuff. It's
the,
just when they're in a diner
yeah.
and it's like, oh, I have a green salad. Please,
yeah.
What the fuck else are you kind of eating there? I love
yeah.
that. So funny.
Yeah, and when
I love the mistake, the hitman shooting himself at the end. Hilarious.
Yeah,
and very
Coen
Brothers.
Brother.
It
yeah.
felt very very.
I'm gonna say I've
Coen
lost
Brothers
complete respect for them. I didn't really like them that much anyway,
oh,
but
on.
Now I just have no interest
Trigger
in either watching
so
anything they make again.
Well, they took if it, but they took their names
yeah.
off it, right?
So
like,
you still
they,
made the thing.
Do have
it's
you
like
watched
saying,
the series?
Take your name
man.
Off your child. It doesn't make it not your child.
That's true.
Well, have you watched
like
a serious
credits.
Man? That's one I always recommend to anyone
yes.
who's hesitant about.
Is that the
them.
One with
they're really
where
good.
They're gay?
No, no, that's the one about the professor.
No, that's the Tom Ford one you're thinking of.
Yeah. Oh, I haven't seen that one. I liked Bot and Fink.
I haven't seen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
I wrote that one.
This
they
is
had
more similar to.
I mean, I hated Fargo.
And it's a.
It's okay.
Oh,
it
I like Fargo. I like Fargo. I still think True Grit and Inside Llewyn Davis is their best work.
I don't agree with that at all.
That's when they really... I know you don't
yeah.
like True Grit. I love it. I think it's one of my favorite screenplays of all time. The fact that... I always insist that I love the way it's written. I love the look and I love the music.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
Wait, Hail Caesar. This feels more in line with Hail Caesar, actually,
did watch
than,
it?
Than anything they've done. I think you'll like Hail Caesar a little bit better, Michelle, because it's all about 20s Hollywood.
I mean, I'm not
and
really
like
interested
also a
in
farce
anything they make.
About,
Not anymore.
You know, I want to see their new Macbeth. Not there, just Joel
Coen.
Well,
they start with Macbeth. We've had like 200 remakes this like decade alone, and we're only a year into it.
Yeah, I don't know why the Macbeth's
different. Like, there are 37 Shakespeare plays. Why does it always have to be Macbeth?
Because
easy to get funded.
Oh, hail Macbeth, who shall be king. It sounds cool.
Because
core.
It's the shortest one.
If you say that, then... that's also, yeah. Probably because it's, like, easy to fit into, like, a theatrical
one,
movie.
It's, what's his name? Denzel Washington. He's Macbeth.
Yeah, and Francis McDormand.
Oh, yeah, I think I saw the
okay,
trailer.
Well,
it looked off.
Okay, well, I have another question. Do you think movies like this are... still gonna get made in like 5 or 10 years?
They are still getting made.
I don't think so. I don't think they're really
made
as much
all the time.
Yeah.
Go on Netflix. Like,
yeah, they're all Netflix
straight,
films.
Yeah, they just don't get
theatrical. Like,
yeah,
what was it?
They just don't, they're still
films?
Getting made. They're just not theatrical
yeah,
releases.
Yeah,
they're like
yeah,
Hallmark
yeah. They're
films,
like Hallmark films. It's not like you can't get like George
yeah.
Clooney at his peak.
Yeah, they're all like nobodies.
Into,
or like
yeah.
people
or
who aren't doing very well in their career.
You'll be like Logan Paul in Intolerable Cruelty 2.
Vanessa Hudgens and stuff. It's all movies.
And
like
Vanessa
that.
Hudgens and stuff.
So I'm not seeing
yeah.
a lot of those movies coming out. Like, it's mostly either.
I think these kind of films
stuff
killed
stuff.
Them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I mean, The Proposal came out in 2009.
Yeah,
so,
I feel like they
you know, kind of
ended around
have you,
2012.
There's so many of these. The Ugly Truth.
Oh, The Ugly Truth. Oh, right. And, The Gerard Butler was in a bunch of them.
Yeah, Life as We
P.S.
Know
I
It.
Love You.
I like that one.
That was okay.
What was that one with Gerard Butler as a bounty hunter and then Jen Aniston?
Is it called
the
bounty,
bounty
hunter?
Hunter.
Oh,
it's literally just
it?
Called the bounty
okay.
hunter.
I hate that film.
It's just called the bounty hunter. Yeah. Remember Killers, also with Katherine Heigl and Ashton Kutcher?
I remember the Vegas one what happened.
What happened in Vegas? That's such a stupid. Oh, concept.
I remember that. That's always on TV. Yeah. That's always on TV.
Well, yeah, so they got married in Vegas, and then they're like, "We won the lottery or something," and then they had to.
Yeah, that's literally like the movie.
I feel like this one, like, I don't know, like 50 First Dates was big back when.
Yeah.
That was actually good though. That was like a nice kind. However creepy, like, actually, like, a romantic comedy with a concept.
I quite like Click, to be honest. The Adam Sandler one, the only Adam Sandler film I like. No, actually, I like Big Daddy.
You don't like Punch Drunk Love?
No, is it Baby Daddy?
Oh, Big Daddy's pretty good. Big Daddy.
Yeah, I love Big Daddy. It's so funny.
It's pretty funny, yeah.
Not Lil Nicky?
That I've never seen.
No,
that.
I couldn't watch that.
That's the dumbest one. Happy Gilmore and Lil Nicky's probably the dumbest.
I've never seen Happy Gilmore or the other one as well. What was that other one? Billy Madison. I've never seen that.
Billy Madison.
I think I have, and I hated it.
But those types of movies are, like, increasingly just pushed on Netflix, or, like, all Adam Sandler movies.
Now he's Hubie Halloween, and, yeah. Because these things I think they can't cast big names because it costs too much, and then they can't make the money back, like, competing with, like, you know, fucking any MCU movie coming out any day of the week.
Yeah, well, nothing can compete with them, because everyone's stupid enough to watch them.
Now it's all digital. Well, unfortunately, it's the only thing that actually gets into theaters now, right? So,
I think people want to go see.
At least, like, I think romantic comedies need a concept, because with, like, something like A Good Year, there is no concept. He just goes to the vineyard and faces zero obstacles.
Almost the whole thing is the romance.
I'm trying to think of, like, what his, like, yeah, what his problem was. Well, it's not even
like
really
he disconnected
about the romance
with
until,
his
like,
past
in.
That was, for some reason, a very big deal, even though he remembered none of it.
Yeah.
No, like, connecting thing that made him forget it. Like, other than he's
the only
just
connecting
awful
thing is
that,
I like the visual tricks they play.
He just said he became an asshole, yeah. But do you think, Intolerable Cruelties, the divorce thing, is like more of a concept, like the fact that they're all just out for money.
They pitted against each other, at least.
It felt like an
highlights,
worst vision,
I think, the artifice of it all.
Oh, really?
Really? It suits anything like
no,
this?
No, it's
like
suits
this,
it like that, but better. It, like, except that they feel like satisfied that they've solved a case. And the suit is a big deal, and the, like, I don't know.
Now
I just
like,
kept
I
thinking
guess
of
give
suits.
We give it up.
And how I'd prefer to be watching that instead.
Because they're lawyers. They are. I didn't think about that.
They are lawyers. I like the cast in Intolerable Cruelty a lot better. I loved almost every actor that pops up.
I hated
up.
Every
like,
single
I know him.
One.
I know you. You're great. That was Jeffrey Rush in the beginning as like the television. Like, I love that. He looks
and
sounds completely different.
I just knew the granddad from Gilmore Girls.
Richard Jenkins as... Richard Jenkins is her lawyer. I love him. Oh, I always love seeing him. He's such an underrated actor, and he's in everything.
What do you expect when you do films like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I like his...
You're never going to get an Oscar.
He did do
a
Step Brothers,
too. Oh, you know
too.
What else he was in that is a rom-com? It's that Justin Timberlake one with Mila Kunis.
Oh, No Strings Attached.
No,
not that
Friends
one. The other
Benefits.
One. Friends with Benefits.
Yeah. Oh, Friends with Benefits. The same
yeah,
movie.
Yeah. It's...
I can't believe
they
came out at the same time.
Yeah.
I always preferred No Strings Attached.
Insane. Really?
I don't
know
why.
Me and my friends were dumb, so we liked the other one more. We watched both of them in theaters, me and my friends. High school or middle school or whatever.
Why? You're old guys.
I know, I know. It was weird. It was, I still don't understand what made us go there. We were probably bored and we're all like nerdy guys, so we had nothing to do. But I do remember the audience was like almost all older women. Yeah.
But those movies, despite it all being about sex, are like as PG 13 and chaste as you can come as they come.
We haven't mentioned like the Nicholas Sparks ones.
Oh.
Like he was huge in the 2010. Well.
It's almost, but his isn't like a Nicholas Spark movie, almost like a genre in itself.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah,
way.
Basically,
like...
someone's dying. It's really sad. It'll make you cry. The end.
And they're kind of way sadder. These are lighter films.
Yes, They're much more dramas, romantic dramas, than they are romantic comedies. At least these two are, like, A Good Year is trying to be a comedy, but I don't think Ridley Scott should ever make a comedy again.
Well, yeah,
maybe don't make a
none
film
of
again.
The jokes worked.
None of the jokes work. He can keep making movies. Like, I like the last one.
He's making that Gucci one. The one
he made
Gucci.
That? Oh, I don't
apparently
want to watch it.
Apparently it's awful.
Now.
Yeah. Yeah, apparently it's not good.
It looks really bad.
Come all of the old men
and
just
then
retire
he
and we can just have a load more women.
And then he recently was saying like he hates like the Marvel movies because they
original.
Don't have a good script.
How original. I've been saying it for 10 years.
And then when they say like, oh, the Last Duel is set in France and like you didn't get any of the actors to do a French accent, he's like, yeah, accents are dumb, but then in the House of Gucci everybody's doing an accent, so I'm like, where do you stand, Ridley? Did you get everybody to do an accent because Gaga wouldn't do an accent? Like, I don't get it.
I don't think he cares enough.
Then why talk shit? He just likes talking shit. I guess like he really just like
But I've said this about Ridley Scott. I mean, he feels like he's making TV movies because of how many they are.
Yes.
And the pace he's churning them out. Like, I can understand if you're really good at your craft, but at the same time, it feels like you don't even put any thought into them if they're just coming out like, you know.
The empty throwaway film.
Yeah.
I think with A Good Year, he wanted to just take it easy because
yeah,
I checked.
But
I
you're
was
making
like, oh, I didn't
follow, films.
Follow
like, you don't just take it
here.
Easy. If you want to take
he
it
just
easy,
did
take
the
a
Kingdom,
break.
Well,
he did what's that Kingdom of?
He did the Kingdom of Heaven right before this. He did Kingdom of Heaven right before this. And the Kingdom, I know, and I've,
yeah, I've never
seen
heard
the
of it, so it must be
times,
garbage.
Including the theater.
It's,
Hear me out here. Having seen like the theatrical and the direct and the director and a director's cut, it was a lot of effort in making that, and I can understand why. Like for his next movie, he just wants to like switch it up, make something that's a bit more laid back and also close to his house, so he doesn't have to globetrot. And
why doesn't he just make one in his shed
then? With co-star Russell Crowe. I think if he could.
That's why David Fincher made Panic Room, which I've said on the podcast before, but I'm going to say it again in case you
something
didn't listen to the other episodes.
Yeah, something a bit more small scale and honestly a genre movie, right? A full-on genre film.
I know,
film.
But like I wouldn't want to make just a genre film that's garbage.
Yeah, you ideally
he clearly just
make
needs the money.
Good.
And like when you
no,
when it screams I need money, I'm like go away. Stop
I don't I don't agree with that. I think he probably the money's nice, but making a movie and right by your house and it's about a guy just drinking
lazy.
Wine. Feels like he was like, you know what? I'm gonna do something for me. I'm gonna give myself a gift.
For me, this is one
and,
for me.
It doesn't feel like he was doing this
Russell
for money.
Here.
He was like doing it for just like taking advantage of his position as being, you know, big.
I was reading the IMDb trivia for it. Apparently, like there's that the tennis sequence between him and the vineyard owner exists because Ridley Scott wanted like a battle scene, and it's like, and I love
yeah,
that. I love that. Like he thought about that.
That's how his
brain works in terms of filmmaking. Everything's a conflict, and like, but then there's no conflict. This is a movie where there's no conflict, so it's just even more baffling. Also, where is his cousin from? Is she American? Is she Australian? She sounds like
I have a question though.
I know Abby Cornish
no,
is Australian.
No, is the wine? So
yes.
The are they? Did they fake the fact that the wine was bad?
Yeah, I didn't get that. What?
Yeah.
So why was he making bad wine for if he had like? It's implied that he makes the basement wine, right?
Yes.
So why would he, you know, make that bad wine on purpose if it's implied that he's. He knows how to make good wine.
I thought they said it was illegal.
People
like the vines they use were illegal or something.
But then he says the guy said he says it's illegal, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and they paid the guy the guy to assess it off. So he said it was bad.
I don't know. It's a bit too much work for the Ridley Scott.
if he's the one who's like if Russell Crowe's character is the one who actually knows a lot, like secretly knows a lot about wine when he was a kid, it feels baffling that he just lets the cousin run it instead of him.
She also knows a lot about wine.
She also
knows
a lot about wine.
But doesn't she technically own it?
Like I thought that was like the natural.
Because he wrote that fake letter.
Yeah, she also that's true. Is it true that under French law, like if even if you're
I don't know, probably
child, you can claim Probably.
But then, if that's true, then I'm sure a lot of French kings, like, they probably didn't exist back then.
Yeah,
but,
that probably doesn't exist. Yeah, wouldn't that... Yeah, and that sequence where his assistant is, like, putting ice cubes on her, disgusting. Yeah. I was like, what is this? Why is this happening?
Yeah, that made
and
no sense.
The way she talks and acts feels like Charlize Theron's character in Arrested Development, Rita. It just keeps reminding me of her. I just kept thinking of, like, four British eyes.
Mr. F.
Cubes. Yeah. Yeah. That's how she acts, like she. And that awful, awful comment at the end when the vineyard owner is like, she's like Henry, but with a nice accent. Oh, and I'm like, oh my god, like Jesus Christ.
Like a child.
I literally said Jesus Christ.
I didn't understand the woman, the kitchen, and then him, who run the vines, because they were implying that like they were the same age when Russell Crowe's character was a kid.
Yeah.
But like they already looked like
they're maybe
mid 40s or something.
Age. They look the same age as him.
Yeah, they don't look that
right,
much.
They.
I'm like, you're at most 10 years older than him. Like, what the fuck?
I forgot the pool thing, right? She's the same.
Yeah. This. Oh, Marion Cotillard's the same age as Russell Crowe. You're kidding me? Are you fucking kidding me? I'm sorry, dumb but like movie. Dumb
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, so should we
dumb
take a
movie.
Break?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, we should take a break. Intolerable Cruelty is a better one. Okay, take a break. And we're back! And now onto our brand new segment where I'm gonna rate these films. I have 7 reels, right? 7 reels. And I have to rate these. And
divide the reels.
You can only divide the reels, it can only be one, okay? So in my opinion, my humble, humble opinion, I will give Intolerable Cruelty 5 reels. 5 reels. And I'm gonna give a good year to. Reason being, Intolerable Cruelty actually, to me, it felt like it actually like had a point to it, that there's a point to it, and it's actually actively like deconstructing and mocking the genre, whereas The Good Year kind of just meanders.
Like you.
And doesn't really do anything, and doesn't do anything new. That's true, just like me. All right, moving on. What have we watched this week? Are we all doing it?
I don't know.
We can all do it. All right, Michelle, how many reels do you give?
As a Good Year gets 6, Intolerable Cruelty gets 1. Whoa. And a Good Year only gets so many because I like the house and the dog.
That's it?
Oh, that's yeah. True.
That's it.
Okay, well, I give Intolerable Cruelty. I basically just what Arvin said. I agree with Arvin. This one. I thought it was kind of fun.
Yeah, I laughed, and I thought it was on purpose. Okay, well, moving on. What have we watched this week?
Nothing,
Michelle. Nothing. I know you've been working on your schoolwork. I was kind of busy. I haven't had time to watch much stuff. I watched one episode for the very first time in like 10 years of Everybody Loves Raymond. Recently been added to Netflix, and I have to say I kind of like it. I only just watched the pilot, to be honest, but I can see myself watching more. I will watch this rather than The Office. There you go.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, that was perfect. I like the domestic drama.
Oh, so that's... Okay, I see. That's why...
That's what I like. I like the family stuff, yeah.
So I watched half of the Velvet Underground documentary, and so far I'm not enjoying it. it's done like a whole like, oh, this is Andy Warhol's band, so we're gonna make like a documentary that's like equally as weird and play with the format, and then you just end up not learning anything, and they're just showing a bunch of clips in like weird order and split screen and not showing you the full name, and that counts as being avant-garde and edgy and cool, and that just, I don't know, maybe
Is it just frustrating because you already do know a bit about the Velvet Underground and you know like what they're
probably
like,
yeah, but I but if around. In general I'm kind of over music documentaries. The Sparks Brothers one.
Sparks Brothers.
I didn't enjoy that. I feel like what are you gonna tell me that's not on their Wikipedia page? And you know, just if you've got the band there and you've got just tell us some inside stuff that we haven't heard. Don't be like, oh, the band met at Penn Station in 1963 and that's how the
it's all about their legacy.
Yeah, I know, I can read this stuff. To tell you something.
It's funnily enough, this was created by Todd Haynes as director.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Guy to Carol. So it wasn't good. You wouldn't
I wanna finish
a very cursory understanding of the band. Would you recommend, if I don't know anything about the band, do you think this is a good place to start? Or just like it's trying to be
if you don't know much about the band, I think it would be fun. But actually, you know what? No. Just go on their Wikipedia page.
I'll just read the Wikipedia page then. I like the music.
Yeah, it doesn't. Maybe it's because I haven't finished it, but maybe when I'll finish it, something will clear up. But it's not a perfect tribute. I don't get why everyone's so impressed by it.
Cool. Well, that brings us to our final segment. Mm-hmm. What are our recommendations? Having seen these two, has to be another romantic comedy.
Okay.
Now we have to recommend one that we actually think is a good companion piece after the showdown.
I don't want a companion piece to this. Are you kidding me?
What's a better version of all these movies?
Anywho.
But is it a
honestly your
career-driven young man or woman who sets aside his or her whatever to establish roots? Well, okay, mine is up in the air, so.
That's what, oh my god, I kept thinking about that. Yeah. Because I thought George Clooney's character is like the exact same guy in Up in the Air. He's just playing the exact same guy.
Yeah.
With the exact same mannerisms.
A little less slapstick and...
Yeah, a bit more heavy on the drama.
But it's essentially the same thing, right? He's a career first.
And a better version of it, arguably a better version.
I would say so.
It's about something. My recommendation is if you enjoy The Good Year, kind of just want something that's like also equally invested in just chilling around, Before Midnight, where you get to just watch a couple hang out for a day in Greece.
Yeah,
and
but you need to
the
watch
exact
the other
same
two
vibe.
Before.
They drink wine. Yeah, but like this is the one.
I think Before Midnight is the weakest.
Oh, it's my favorite. It's my personal favorite.
But I think you need the other two.
What are the other two?
You do Before
Midnight.
Oh.
Why did I think it was Midnight in Paris? I thought you were talking about Midnight.
Oh.
That's Woody Allen.
That's another Woody Allen.
Yeah.
But that's also a good example of a good romantic comedy, I think.
Yes.
That's actually a much better recommendation. But I like the chill vibe of Before Midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And most of it is just them sitting around drinking wine.
No, it's
and
not.
That's fine.
It's them arguing.
The whole movie.
Yeah, we're all drinking wine. The whole movie's just them arguing. Yes, which I like.
Yeah, it's my favorite.
Yeah,
of the
that's
trilogy,
my recommendation.
To tell you the truth, I don't know what it says about me.
Incredible.
Maybe with time, my favorite will become the one where they're young, because I'll be old. But who knows?
How wistful.
So, Michelle, what are we watching next week?
So we're watching actually good films. How marvelous!
No.
So we're gonna finally do Bergman's The Seventh Seal.
Yeah.
And Woody Allen's Love and Death.
Ooh. I'm super excited for this podcast.
We're finally getting around to our namesake.
Yeah, then it legitimizes us as podcasters.
Yes.
Yes.
This should be the first episode.
This should be the first episode. We took us a while, but we finally got here. Thank you very much for joining us this week. Have yourself a real good weekend. Mm-hmm. And well, not weekend. Well, it's really this release
you're
on
listening
Thursday.
To
so, yeah. Whenever you're listening to, I hope this finds you well.
Bye.
The Seventh Reel is hosted by Arvin Huang, Michelle Hassel, and Yusuf El-Bashir. Logo by Joe Conti. Our ad break music is composed by Yusuf Sui Lim, and our outro music is composed by Yahya El-Bashir. Thanks for listening.